Everyone, thank you for joining us. The reason we're here today is to talk to our carbon disclosures, which were released with our full year results recently, and then there were further disclosures this Monday with our full year reporting suite, and in particular our TCFD disclosure. On the line today from ANZ is myself, CEO Shayne Elliott, and the Head of Institutional, Mark Whelan. Over to you, Shayne.
Hey, thanks, Jared, and thanks everybody for making the time to join us here today, which is really hopefully a discussion about our new climate change statement. So look, over the next hour, we're going to discuss the work we've done recently to update our position. Now, we announced this a couple of weeks ago, as Jared said, at our full year results. Now, I'll speak briefly, then I'll hand over to Mark, our Group Executive for the Institutional Bank, to discuss how we're engaging with our largest emitting customers on their own transition planning. And then we'll go straight into your questions. So look, first, I thought I'd take you through the key changes, how we're seeking to be clearer about our long-term aspirations and how we intend to get there. Now look, many of our customers are taking action already, and we consider our new policy measures really just reflect the direction that they are taking. The global transition will require trillions to be invested in clean energy and efficient infrastructure by 2035. And bank lending makes up the most significant source of funding for that transition. It means that the banks have a major role to play in financing the rebalancing required. Now, ANZ can play its role by supporting customers and projects that contribute to reducing emissions and those that are resilient to a changing climate. We really want our products and services, our knowledge and relationships, to contribute positively to the social and economic transition that's already underway. By taking the actions outlined in the new climate change statement, it's really about us committing to play our part in improving social and environmental sustainability for future generations, which is in line with our purpose to shape a world where people and communities thrive. Now, specifically, our statement outlines our approach and strengthened commitments in support of this transition. And it really has three priority parts. The first is helping our customers with their own transition planning. Second is supporting the transition of industries. Third, reducing our own footprint. In the slide pack we sent out, you'll see today, there's some further details on the commitments under each area, but I just thought I'd call out a few or some of the main commitments. But what are we committing to? So first, you know, disclosing better metrics. Now, this is all about showing that we are seeking to be Paris aligned, starting with commercial property and power generation. By releasing those metrics, we are effectively saying to you, track us, don't just trust us. We highlight work underway, and we show that many customers are already acting to lower their own footprint. So we're a proxy, if you like, for that transition already occurring, and we can help define where we're heading through setting targets next year to reduce our financed emissions. We're also allocating $1 billion of our existing $50 billion sustainable solutions target towards disaster resilience, which is obviously very relevant here in Australia. For example, we'll allocate capital to fund or facilitate resilience initiatives for weather-related events, or to build resilience against non-weather-related disasters such as pandemics. This measure will really stand to benefit, in our view, rural and regional communities. We're also strengthening our policy, and I want to cover a couple of the points here. We will focus on supporting diversified customers, which means we will no longer bank any new business customers with material, and you know, our threshold for material is, you know, anything more than 10% exposure to thermal coal. And this is down from our existing 50% threshold. We're also, for existing customers who have more than 50% thermal coal exposure, and there's not many of them, but we will engage with them to seek specific, time-bound and public diversification strategies. Now, if they don't have the strategy by 2025, which is not far away, we will cap limits and we will actively reduce our exposure over time. And by 2030, that threshold will progress, that 50% threshold will progressively reduce to 25%. So a bit of a sinking lid. And by 2030, we will only directly finance gas and renewable power generation. And moving on, our decision to only directly finance gas and renewable power generation from 2030 means we will not directly finance any new coal-fired power plants or any thermal coal mines or expansions. So we're going to wind down any existing direct financing of these kind of assets by 2030. And just moving on to the property sector, we will only finance the construction of new large-scale office buildings if they are highly energy efficient and being built to either at least a neighbour's five-star energy rating or a five-star green star design rating or whatever the equivalent is internationally. And look, lastly, it's also important that we reduce our own footprint. So we will accelerate our emission reductions by sourcing 100% of electricity needed for our business operations from renewables by 2025. Look, as you hopefully, as you can see, these are medium to long-term goals that we seek to achieve over the next decade. Now, lastly, let me just emphasise the work we're doing to help assist transition planning by our customers. And Mark will talk more about this in a minute, but essentially, we're endeavouring to get behind what our customers are largely what they're already doing. The scope of this work covers our large institutional high-emitting business customers across a number of sectors. It's in these sectors that we encourage our customers to build climate change mitigation and adaptation risk into their business strategy. And we'll support them in establishing, as I mentioned before, specific, time-bound and very, you know, importantly, public transition plans and diversification strategies. Now, overall, we want to be respectful of those customers because, you know, the reality is we've banked many of them actually over a long period of time. But we need to prepare the bank for the future. And in our view, this is good old-fashioned risk management and, frankly, a great opportunity for the bank as well. So, look, in closing, let me say we are and I am personally very proud of these changes and I feel they strike the right balance in the current environment. We're seeking to protect the bank and its shareholders from climate-related risk. We're seeking to adapt to changing community expectations. We're seeking to engage with our stakeholders to explain more clearly why we're doing this. And we're seeking to prepare to help our customers maximise their own opportunities. But we can see that the world is changing and governments and our customers are moving towards a net zero future, which is a great thing, and that transition is already underway and we want to be not just part of it, we want to be an active participant in that. So let me hand over to Mark.
Okay, thanks Shane and welcome everybody. Look, before I jump into what we're actually doing with our customers, I thought I'd just give a little bit of context, more context if you like, to how we got to these policy announcements that we've made in the last few days. So, post our full year results last year, where we did obviously a number of interviews with our shareholders, we saw a number of significant increase in the not only the number of questions around climate and carbon, what we were doing in that space from the shareholders, but the intensity of those questions we felt had gone to a whole new level. So after these meetings that we had last year, it was about this time last year, we came back and discussed that as a group, and what we decided was that Kevin Corbley, our Chief Risk Officer, Jared Brown, who's on the call, obviously Head of Corporate Affairs for us, and myself, organised a trip to Europe just to do a bit of fact-finding and information gathering, if you like, around what was actually happening with climate-related trends over there, just so that we could get a little bit more information on what we should be doing as a group. Now, we met with a large number of our shareholders from offshore. We met with a number of our customers, and that included some of the large energy companies that we deal with. We met with a number of industry bodies that were obviously interested in and active in this space. And importantly, we met with a series of regulators and because we wanted to get an idea of the way they were looking at risk, particularly for the banks going forward. Now, why it reinforced a lot of what we already knew and were hearing from stakeholders, like I've mentioned above, there were three things that really stood out to us. And the first one was that the shareholders and our institutional shareholders and global funds in general are increasingly changing or adapting their own investment policies to climate risks and opportunities. Now, we knew that. However, what surprised us was just the pace of how that was occurring, and we felt that that was likely to continue. Now, we also drew from that this is likely to have significant impacts on equity and debt capital markets now, but also more so in the future. Second point was that many of our customers are already aware of that point, maybe not to the same level that we became aware, and they're already adapting their business to respond to climate issues offshore and I think increasingly onshore in Australia. And with regards to their capital and their debt management, their business operational risk, and the opportunity that they have to be better at disclosures, which is one of the things that we want to concentrate on. So the customers were already starting to react. Some are leading the pack and some are a little bit slower, and I'll talk to that a little bit when I talk about our discussions with our top emitters. The third point was really around the regulators, and this was where we probably got the biggest shock when we went and spoke to a series of the regulators throughout Europe. It was obvious that a number of them were starting to talk to banks in the region around stress testing their own carbon and climate-related risks and loans that they were making in their portfolio. And what became very clear from the regulators is that they see this as a significant and growing risk to banks, and they are looking to conduct risks going stress testing going forward, which may lead to different actions from the regulators around capital weightings, et cetera. Now, some of that is obviously still under development, and I believe the Bank of England, I think, will now do stress testing with the banks in the UK sometime in June of next year. So those are the three key trends that we saw. So what we did was we came back and decided to look at our own policies. And what you're seeing today, or what you've seen over the last 2 weeks, is really as a result of that due diligence that we did. But more importantly, the feedback that we're getting from, you know, the shareholders, the customers, our staff, regulators, et cetera. And, you know, we obviously listen and talk to the NGOs as well. But I have to say, as Shane mentioned, we see this as not only the right thing to do, but it is very much a risk-based decision that we're making with the policy announcements that we've put forward. So I'll just talk quickly now about the work that we're doing with our customers, because many of the people and the stakeholders I just mentioned offshore were quite interested in what we'd already started doing with a number of our top 100 emitters. So we've been talking with and engaging with the customers that we've identified in sectors and large companies that we have classified as our top 100. A key part of the discussions we're having with them is basically around their climate risks, both in transition and in physical risks, and how they're thinking about it, how they're managing them, and often we share what we're seeing other companies doing in this space with, obviously, without sharing names. So it's a two-way conversation that we're having with them. We use it very much as a learning exercise for both them and for us. Now, the way that we've gone about this is that we're using the TCFD framework as a guide, and we step through several steps to help drive the conversations. First one is, you know, what governance do they have in place to manage climate risk? Do they have any at all? And if so, what are they doing? Second is on targets. Have they set any? And are they public? Are they specific? And are they time-bound? And if not, are they planning to do so? And thirdly, do they have a mechanism for how they disclose climate risks and opportunities, both internally and externally? And what's their roadmap and plan for the future? What will they be implementing and what they will be doing differently? So you can see it's very much a fact-gathering and information-sharing approach that we're taking. Now, each customer is at a different stage of transition, so our conversations are quite nuanced and not prescriptive. And I'd have to say to date, what we've spoken to about 83 of our top 100 emitting institutional customers, and the conversations have been really encouraging. And as you'd expect or hope, our discussions haven't come as a surprise to the customers, and many have asked for follow-up discussions and even at the board level. Now, basically, we're looking to support this group of customers in developing and reporting their transition plans. It's important that we understand what they're doing and share the experiences we're seeing so that we can also look at the associated risks that come from that. Now, this work is undertaken through a structured and ongoing engagement process, which we're learning and developing with our relationship managers and our risk teams working together to understand our customer strategies and to collate information right across sectors and these big companies. So success for us is really ensuring that discussion of climate risk becomes part of our everyday client engagement and that we have deeper understanding of all our customer transition plans. So it is a progressive process, as I mentioned. Now, yesterday, in addition to realising or releasing our climate change statement, we also released our annual report, and I want to point to just a case study in there that featured a company called Wesfarmers. Now, for those people offshore, some of you will be aware of them, some may not. So Wesfarmers is one of Australia's largest listed companies with diversified operations across 30 retail and industrial businesses. It's known for its consumer brands such as Bunnings, Kmart and Officeworks, but it also has interests in fertilisers, chemicals and in the energy sector. So it's very diversified. Now, in September of this year, Wesfarmers announced an accelerated agenda to set and achieve net zero emissions for its retail operations by 2030 and its industrial businesses by 2050. Now, this is on top of some existing 2025 emission targets it already has in place. Now, Wesfarmers believes transitioning to achieve net zero emissions from its business is about doing what's right and good for the environment, but it wants to step up and contribute in a responsible way. It's also what its own customers believe in and has been telling the company and what they want from it. And so from that perspective, Wesfarmers thinks it makes good business sense across all of its stakeholder groups. Now, ANZ has banked Wesfarmers since the 1980s and is supporting it on its transition journey, as you would expect. And we're having open and constructive dialogue on how we can help each other in that journey. Now, there are many other customers taking similar positions both here and offshore, and that just reinforces that we think we're doing the right thing by our policy changes that we've announced. So hopefully you can see our engagement with our largest emitting customers, while it's, still in early stages, is really a top priority for us, and we look forward to progressing this over the coming years. And I have to say, from the conversations we're having, I think it's gathering significant momentum, and we'll probably look to extend this to a broader base of customers in due course. So I might leave it there, Shane, and just hand back to Jared.
Thanks, Mark. And just by way of guiding people to the disclosures that Mark was referring to a moment ago there on pages 34 to 37 of the annual report. There's also further disclosure in the ESG supplement at pages 42 to 45, and also there's the TCFD disclosure, which I mentioned earlier as well. So I might now hand over to the facilitator, so we move to Q&A now.